Hey guys, welcome to the Next Level Agents podcast. I am your host, Kevin Kaufman, and along with my business partner and co-host, Fred Weaver, we bring to you our podcast all about getting to the next level. Sometimes we talk to real estate agents, sometimes brokers, sometimes people just in and around our space, and sometimes just entrepreneurs in general. But our point here is to talk to the brightest and the best and to pull gold nuggets out of them and bring them to you so that way you can take little actionable pieces of advice, sometimes big actionable pieces of advice, and make your business even better and help you get to the next level. Do me a favor, if you haven't already, go over to ratethispodcast.com. ratethispodcast.com/NLA stands for Next Level Agents. And please leave us a 5-star review if you have not already. All right, without further ado, welcome to today's episode.
All right, we're back on the Next Level Agents podcast. I'm excited for today's episode. My buddy Colby is here. What's up, dude?
What's up, man?
How are you?
I'm really good, man. Blessed to be here. Thank you.
Awesome. Glad to see you in person. That's always good. I feel like I mostly see you online, maybe on a Zoom from time to time.
Yes, sir.
We get to talk on the phone.
We do.
Don't get to hang out as much in person as I wish.
Yeah, we're going to fix that.
Yeah, I'm down with that.
Okay.
So, Colby, I want to just start with your story, dude. When I met you, I remember the day I met you. We were in Chicago, and we were going to Tony Robbins.
Yes, sir.
And best steak dinner of my life, by the way, which is...
Gibson's.
Yeah, that's a whole podcast in and of itself, that dinner. But so we'll save the rest of that for another day. But we go back, and at the time, you were a real estate agent.
I was a hot off the press real estate agent, just trying to make my way and find my purpose.
Yeah, so... You're not a real estate agent today, and I want to talk about that. I want to talk about your transition because I think there's a lot to learn there, and I want to share that with other people. So why don't we start with why'd you get into real estate? I'm always interested in that question, first of all, but I want to hear from you. Why'd you get into real estate?
My dad was from Cheyenne, Wyoming, and he scaled a gargantuan real estate business, and he sold mostly land and several hundred acres at a time, and he did really well. So built himself up. And then fast forward 15 years later, my mother was a real estate agent as well. And I don't know, it just was in my blood. So I had always been in sales in some aspect or another, and just odds and ends stuff, insurance. I was a credit manager at the Rent-A-Center. I used to repossess furniture and just, I don't know.
That sounds fun.
Oh, dude. Yeah. We'll get into that later. But I had moved to Flagstaff, and that's where I did that. So we had to go repossess furniture on the Indian reservation, and that was a spicy job. But at the time, like when all this was coming to a head, I worked at Chase Bank, and I was in retail banking, and I was in wealth management, and I did that for about 3 years, and I did well. So I just immediately fell into the groove, and they gave me a little bit longer leash because of the numbers that I put on the board. And 3 years consecutively, I had outsold everybody between Kingman, where I lived at the time, Bullhead, Havasu. And then I looked at my W-2 at the end of year three, it said $55,000.
Ooh.
I was like, okay, fuck this place. I'm out. So At the time I was married, my wife at the time was a real estate agent, and she had done very well for herself. And I was seeing what she was doing and all the effort that she was putting into it and the results that she was getting. I was like, okay, this is cool. And I know how to talk to people, and I'm pretty well connected in the Kingman market. So I decided to just burn the boat. And that was probably one of the biggest things I learned from that Tony Robbins seminar that you and I went to, is just decide, and decide means to cut off everything else, like all other options. So I did. I quit the bank, got my real estate license, and I did that for a little over a year. And within that time, I was commuting from Kingman to Lake Havasu, which is about an hour drive, and which was fine. You get to get in the zone on the way there. On the way back, you get to decompress from the day, so you bring your best self to the home. But that drive wears on you after a while, an hour there, an hour back every day. So we'd made a mutual decision we only knew, I think, one or two people in Lake Havasu at the time. And you know what? We're going to do it. So we sold our house, packed up everything, moved to Lake Havasu. And during that time when I was commuting, I was enlisted to grow a branch of David Queen's real estate team there. And it was really well. I did really well at it. I was carrying seven to nine pending at a time, and I was doing okay and I liked it. So the guy that was doing my loans, you've also had him on, Greg Whitmire, and he was doing my loans and he invited me out to lunch. So we go out to lunch and he's asking me questions like lenders do. I'm like, okay. And then he starts asking me some different questions. I was like, what the hell is he trying to recruit me right now? So at the time, I was rather young in my psychology. So I got offended. I was like, oh, what do you mean? I'm like beating on my chest. Are you saying I'm not a good real estate agent? And I had let my emotions settle a little bit. And I was like, you know what? There might be some truth to this. So I got on another call with him, started asking him questions. And about as quickly as I had made the decision to get my real estate license, I made the decision to get out of the real estate game and step into the mortgage lending game.
So just that spurred from that lunch conversation.
That's it.
Really? I want to go back for a second. Why were you going? First of all, why were you commuting to Havasu? Why did you have to go to Havasu every day?
That's where my team leader at the time, that's where the immediate need was.
Oh, okay.
So he was doing really well, crushing the Kingman market, and he wanted to expand. So I've always been just an inherent risk taker. And I was like, if I'm already going to take the risk, and I'm looking at the Havasu market and their average price point was over double what Kingman was. I was like, okay, there's opportunity here. I'm already getting into a new space anyways. So I don't want to stay in the Kingman market, grow this huge book of business all the while 2 years later to have to start all over again and go to Havasu. So I might as well just go right now.
Got it.
So that's how that worked. And I'm so happy that I did.
That's cool. How long were you in real estate before you decided you were going to give lending a shot?
A little over a year. It wasn't very long. It was enough for me to learn how things worked, establish some relationships, learn how to interpret markets, both like real estate and financial to some degree, and can figure out which one I wanted to do. I like puzzles. In lending, there's a lot more moving parts, in my opinion, to a transaction, and I vibrate really high. So I like the fast-paced part of it, and yeah.
So you're in real estate a year and you decide, hey, maybe this isn't the best fit. Mortgage feels like a better fit.
Yes.
And how did Greg know that? Like, because obviously I would assume, and I don't know, we could ask Greg, or maybe the answer is you went to lunch because he's probably trying to earn your business for your loans.
Yeah.
And at some point during that lunch, he saw or heard something that made me go, instead of trying to recruit his loans, I should recruit him to do loans.
You have someone like this in your life, Mr. Weaver, and you guys can tell it, from what I know about you guys, one or the other of you can see things in you that you can't always see in yourself. My interpretation was he saw something in me that was a higher calling than what I was currently doing. He could see I was doing okay, but I was still constricted. I'm a very creative person and I like to be able to express that. And I was doing that to some extent in real estate, but there was some kind of a block or a wedge there. And I felt that conversation would have been beneficial to him, even though that wasn't his intention. That conversation or that lunch would have been beneficial to him in one of two ways. He's either going to add a ton of value because he's asking good questions and earn my business. Cool. Or he's going to recruit somebody who he can build something with. And it ended up being the latter.
From the outside looking in, because I knew you. I didn't know you as well then, but I did know you. From the outside looking in, it looked like or felt like as soon as you got into to the mortgage side, it felt like just such a good fit for you. Like I was like,
it clicked instantly.
I was like, holy shit, this is okay. I see why he did that. This is very easy to see that I'm not going to use the word natural because you work hard. However, it felt like a better fit right away, even to me on the outside. And so did it feel that way to you as well?
There's a rather jarring initial like shock factor to anything like that when you jump in. So it's very regulated. Had I gotten in 03, 04, 05, it was very much Wild West type of lending. I'm fortunate enough to where shortly after the mortgage industry had gotten overhauled and TRID and Dodd-Frank and all these things had been enacted, that it's very regulated, but at the same time, there's creative freedom that can be had. So we started at I don't want to call it a boutique kind of place, but a smaller local mortgage company. And we did well there. It was established from a local sense. And we were doing good there. My reservation in staying there, and Greg's as well, was we were in a box. We were talking to a client and they didn't fit in this box or this box. We more or less had to tell them, like, peace out, have a good day. And we didn't like that. We felt like there was an opportunity to serve more people. So how do we do that? We expand our arsenal. So I was with, we were with that particular mortgage company for a short amount of time, and it functioned like a team. And we made the decision, this was probably 6.5 years ago, to leave and start a company called Summerlin Financial. And it was two brothers, Adam and Pete Pakes, and they had known Greg from the CrossFit gym. And they had built a relationship and had really good rapport, and they had basically recruited Greg to, here's keys to the castle, here's a check, here's a building, here's an office, go build a business, which is really cool. Because when I see a lot of times when people recruit somebody, it's, okay, we'll bring you on because we like you and your style, but we want you to do everything exactly our way.
Yeah.
And that just never sat right with me. So I'm so grateful for those guys that they trusted Greg, and Greg trusted me enough to be like, hey, what do you want to do? And he's a very dear personal friend of mine. I'd do anything for him. And that was just one of those things. I trust you wholeheartedly. And if you think this is the best move, he was much more well-versed in lending than I was, and in compliance and how everything worked and how to run a business. I'm like, hey, if you think this is a good thing, like, I'll rock with you till the end. And today we're still rocking.
Yeah. So that's cool. So that is, I love that. First of all, you took the risk that, and you made, to me, that feels like a drastic change. I know it's like this kind of the same industry, but first of all, just making the jump over from real estate to the mortgage side, knowing there was something there that was probably a better fit for you as a person, that I think that takes some willingness to put yourself out there. But then also to, sounds to me like you got complete trust in Greg and his leadership and his mentorship and guiding you guys too along your way, not just from your move into mortgage, but then obviously changing companies there pretty early on. That's a big deal.
At the time, everything was so new to me that changing companies wasn't like that.
That was like the least of your...
It really was. Yeah. Because now with the CRMs and the systems and the tech and the processes and all these things, I feel like it would be a quantum leap now to be able to do something like that. But at the time, real estate was new. So is lending. I'll do this. And lending's already new. You want to switch companies? Okay, let's do that. Like, I was joyfully ignorant enough at the time to not give a shit.
Yeah.
Which is really advantageous. And I never thought about it like that until just now. So thank you.
Yeah. That's a good way to put it. What, so tell me about your journey in the mortgage world. Like, I know you're killing it, but
thank you.
Tell me a little bit around, okay, you get your feet under you, you get going on the mortgage side, but then it's like time to grow, because you're not like just doing pretty good, like you're kicking ass. And so what are some of the lessons you've learned, or what are some of the things that you've taken away maybe from Greg and just experiencing your business alone through your deals that have like really helped you to get where you are today?
In my opinion, the best way to learn is by doing more of the thing. And we hear about it all the time. You can read all the books, you can do all the stuff, but until you're in it and you're doing it, you have no real world experience. So I was watching a movie last week, and the person was like, had taken all the courses, had studied all, he worked for the government, worked for the CIA, knew every single thing that there was to know about the CIA, and then got put out in the field and completely crumbled. And I never wanted to be like that. So my big thing was, my biggest issue, if I can be frank, is just staying out of my head. So it's a constant, and to this day, it's still an internal struggle with me to put one foot in front of the other and go and go and go and go before I know. And now when people come to me, and if I'm working with an agent or whatever, and they come to me with an issue, it's like my question, whether it's external and I actually ask them, or the first question that pops up in my head is, what action are you taking to get out of whatever rut you're in? And I'm fortunate enough to have a coach. I've had the same coach, Dustin Runyon, for the last, I don't know, 7 years at least. And that's always been a hot button topic and something that needs continuous crafting, is get out of your damn head and just go out there and do the work. And then every single time I do that, the problem gets solved. It's magic. And I don't want to say that production solves all of your problems, but pretty damn close.
Takes care of most.
it really does. You don't need running shoes to run, but it really fucking helps. So with lending, it's a little bit different. It's still, you're still in the people business. You still have to build relationships. You still have to be good at what you do. And if you just focus on the basics and do that enough times, you can build a really good business. So where I had a hard time initially wrapping my head around things was when I was a real estate agent, I would get in the morning, I would sit down and I would just make phone calls for hours and hours. And the person who was buying or selling the property was the end user of my quote unquote product. Then when I transitioned into mortgage lending, that wasn't the end user of my product anymore. Because even to date, about 95%+ of my business is agent referrals, which is great. The person who is doing the purchase or doing the refinance is not the end user. In my eyes, it's the real estate agent. And if we're breaking that down into a transactional sense, there's a better ROI on my time, because I do a loan for John Smith. And then a couple of years later, he refinances with me. And then he refers his aunt, uncle, brother, let's say over the lifespan of a client, like over a lead, that lifespan might yield 8 to 10 deals. If I build a good relationship with Kevin, the real estate agent, Kevin might refer me 5-10 deals a month. So I quickly realized the ROI on my time, and just in being able to scale something and building the relationships with real estate agents. Fortunately for me, I had previously been married to a real estate agent, and I added quite a bit of value to a team leader in coming up here to start a branch of his team. And I already knew a bunch of real estate agents. So it was pretty easy, because I already spoke their language. I already went to all the same functions. My real estate license isn't active, but I stay up on my CE, which I do my best to go to those in person, because who else goes to CE classes in person? Real estate agents. Yep. So that was my biggest thing. Go where the realtors are. And that could have been anything. Go to a mixer, go play golf, go do whatever. And I almost felt this imposter syndrome at first, because this doesn't feel like work. I'm hanging out, talking to somebody, and we're bouncing ideas off each other. And this is supposed to be work? That's not how I was brought up. I worked construction and I was a welder, and this doesn't seem like work to me. And I look at it like a vessel. And I don't want to say that I don't love the fact that I can help somebody get into the home and accomplish the financial goal. That feels great. That's not like why I do it. It's a vessel. It allows me to contribute. It allows me to educate. It allows me, one of my biggest things is I just want to feel useful. Whatever that means. I just, on my tombstone, I want it to say, this guy was useful. And I noticed that the more that I did that and helped people get what they wanted, I just organically got what I want. Like by default, I didn't even notice it. And when you're not focusing on the zeros as much, the zeros come more.
Yeah.
Weird.
No doubt. So you primarily focus your, I'm gonna call it your lead generation efforts, on your relationships with real estate agents.
I do.
So you're spending a lot of time with agents. What are some of the common characteristics of the most successful agents you work with?
The ability to know what the standards are and stick to them.
Give me an example.
So everybody wants to make things complex. And one of the very first—
We do. As human beings, we do love making shit complex, don't we?
It's so wildly convenient when we want to not take accountability for something.
Yeah.
So one of the first things that my coach taught me is that complexity is the enemy of execution. And whatever the metrics are, whether you need to go connect with 20 people a day, whether you need to do 5 open houses a month or whatever it is, being able to tune out all the ancillary bullshit and just get down to the thing and not go home until the thing is done. If I just met with a new agent last week and they're talking about doing all these things, the name tags and the website and the this, I'm like, how many people are you connecting with a week? How many people are you connecting with a day? What's a connect? I'm like, okay, in my opinion, a connection is a personal or like a back and forth exchange, an interaction about what you do and who you are to somebody to basically try to earn their business. And this person in particular was plugged into a CRM and they're like, I don't have a database. Okay. So we found the cornerstone because they haven't quite been turned on leads yet. So they're trying to go through their sphere. And you quickly realize when you get in, and I learned this in real estate and I learned this in mortgage, when you get into these businesses, you think every single person I know is going to buy something from me. I know it. And then you get in and you're like, oh God, that's not the case at all. Because people do business with people that they know and trust. So they might know you and they might like you. But when you're talking about one of the biggest investments of somebody's life and you haven't earned that trust in that capacity, that changes everything.
Yeah.
So what's the fix? The fix is to get really, 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 really good and basically just get so good that people can't ignore you. So I became ravenously hungry for learning and being resourceful because I know quite a bit about what I do, but I don't know anything or I don't know everything by a long shot. But what's cool is I know exactly where to find everything. So if I don't have an immediate answer, and I ran into this a lot more when I was newer, hey, Colby, how do I do this? Or what's the down payment on this? Or like, I don't know that off the top of my head. Give me about 15 minutes, I'll get back to you. So I would go do the thing, do the research, bring the answer back. Now I have given them true, accurate, honest information. I've done what I said that I was going to do, which is a key thing in any human to human relationship. And then subconsciously, I earn that person's trust because I've performed. And doing that time and time and time again, while being everywhere, that's really what did it for me. I knew nobody when I moved to Havasu. It's been about 9 years. And I just had to be everywhere. I was rarely home. I worked 14, 15 hours a day. And I was absolutely obsessed with what I did. I front loaded the work. And that, in my opinion, that's what got me from not a lot to a lot fast.
All right. I'm so glad you said that. You front loaded the work. Tell me more.
So my stepdad worked for Frontier, the telephone company.
Okay.
35 years. Worked his ass off. One of the hardest working people I've ever met. And to thank him, they matched a little bit on his retirement. And that was pretty much it. I know that real estate, mortgage, whatever, does not have a pension plan. I know that I don't want to work until I'm 70 in an effort to collect what's the max social security right now, like $2,600 or something like that. That's not going to quite do it for me. So I know that I can either become obsessed with what I do in the first, let's say year 1 through 5, and I can work harder than anybody, outwork all my competition. I can learn more. I can do more. I can teach more. I can contribute more. And I can set myself up to where I don't want to say I don't have to work as hard, but the work that I want to do comes easier. As opposed to, so let's say I'm operating at 80 to 90% capacity, or even 100% capacity, if that's a thing. Let's say 80 to 90% capacity in the first 5 years, obsessed. Or I can operate at 30 to 40% capacity, and I can get to the same point where I'm at in my business now, and it might take me 20 to 30 years. I never envisioned that for myself. I wanted to go further, faster. And the only way that I knew how to do that was, number one, outwork everybody and be around people that are doing exponentially better than me.
That's so true. This is something I talked to my real estate team about. It's also something I talked to folks at eXp that want to grow a rev share group is you have to, the way I think of it is like you have to capitalize your business. And early on, you don't have the checkbook to capitalize it. So what you have is you have sweat equity to capitalize it, right? And so the more work you put in early on, the more it pays off. So as an example, I think you'll get this. Somebody asked, Curtis was sharing a story with me, my buddy Curtis Johnson. Somebody had said, hey, how much did you make in your first year at EXP? And he said, I don't know, it's still growing. He said, what do you mean? He said, I don't know how much I made from the work I did in my first year in EXP because it's literally still paying me more every day. Because the connections I made, the people I brought in that I and I helped grow their business, that's actually still duplicating here 6-7 years later. So the impact of my first year, it's not measurable yet. I could only tell you what the number is so far.
Oh, that's good.
And the same is true whether we're talking about doing loans, selling houses, probably in any business, because the said another way, this is compound interest for work, for relationships. And the more you front load that, the longer you have for it to cook. If you think of it like, I always, good way to think of compound interest is it's the difference of cooking something in a crock pot versus cooking something in a microwave. Cook it in a crock pot. The more work you do up front, the longer it's in the crock pot. And the longer it's in the crock pot, the more it gets cooked. Mm-hmm. And it can just keep going forever and ever and ever. And with a crock pot, you don't got to be home. Like you could just, it's plugged in. You just got to leave the dial on. That's it. So in our case, we just got to leave our license active. And it's still, it could actually still be cooking without us there. And that for us, that might look like vacation. It might look like leave of absence. It might just look like a better overall lifestyle. And so I'm a big proponent of, yeah, work your ass off. Or just front load that work. Front load that work of the thing that you really want. Because if you're willing to do that for just a few years, the payoff down the road is so good. Like you literally can't calculate it.
But Kevin, it's so hard.
Yeah. So is being broke.
Exactly. Choose your hard. And I think where a lot of people lately have gotten messed up, and I've seen this on the real estate and the mortgage side, is like what the market's done. Like you could have gotten into the business in COVID and just stuck your hand out and $100 bills would fall into it. And that was a great thing. And especially for newer agents. And I've seen a couple exceptions to this, but in large part, an inflated market will cover up inadequacies in your business, like big time. And then, which happened, everybody's business is just hockey stick. And then they're like, wow, this is what business means. This is what real estate means. This is how all this functions. And then stuff got to, like, for example, in my market, open houses did not exist until about a year and a half ago, 2 years ago. They just... And why would they, right? Because something hit the market on Friday at 10 a.m. And then by 3 p.m., there was already 6 offers on it. So why would there be? But then when we started to come out of COVID and people started realizing, oh, maybe business isn't this good. We actually have to work now. It was a huge separator and still is. So we were in a storm, to say the least, during COVID. Now we're about to enter into another one, which is, we've been, I don't want to say dry for a little while, but rates have been interesting, spicy to say the least. And that's going to get better. And I'm seeing so many people, like right now, as we speak, 40% of loan officers are gone. Like they've left the business. So why would that happen when we're so close to things being quote unquote good again? If you were to just follow cycles, right? Why would so many people exit the business when stuff is so close to being good again? It's because they didn't do enough work to make a sustainable income stream for themselves to last them through the tough times, to get them through the drought.
Chris and I were talking about this yesterday. You and I were talking about Chris Bowers earlier. He and I literally had this conversation yesterday about, here's the thing is, there's like this equilibrium. And if your results start to outpace your effort, that can only last for so long. It's like the number of homes that we sell in the US every year. There's like this baseline, and I think it's 4.5 million a year. And the reality is if we get too far above it, you can bet that at some point in the not so distant future, we're gonna go below baseline. And if we spend a lot of time below baseline, you can bet in the not so distant future, we're going to find our way back up to baseline and then some.
It's a continual thermostat.
It does not matter if we're talking about like my individual business and your individual business or the market as a whole. And so we had a lot of people in your business and in mine over the last few years that were getting great results and their effort was not matching the results they were getting. They were being overcompensated. And that's why 40% of loan officers are no longer in the business. And I don't know what the number currently is of real estate agents. I'm sure I'll find some stupid meme or a reel that gets repeated 1,000 times next week that tells me how many people got out of the business in the last 12 months. However, the point is it's a lot because there's a lot of people that just came in, cashed checks and didn't do the work. And I'm not here to say that's good, bad, right, or wrong. I'm just saying that's just a law. Like that's a scientific law of the world. It's how markets work. And
if any relationship works.
Yeah.
Start a new relationship with a significant other. Try that shit and see how well it works.
Yeah.
Like it'll fall apart fast.
Really quick. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's everything. Like you have to, yes, there's times it's like your results will outpace your effort. But if you don't pick up that effort to deserve those results, you won't have them anymore.
It's really hard to coast uphill.
And it will, unfortunately, this is your baseline work level. If you're up here with results, eventually your results are going to be down here, even if this is your work level, because it all balances out. And that's the thing that I think so many of us don't respect. Mm. It's a tough lesson to learn. It's tough to watch somebody learn that lesson too.
It's tough to watch people not treat it like a job.
Yeah.
I'm gonna come in at 10, I'm gonna leave at 2, and then being pissed off.
But I want a flexible schedule.
Yeah, absolutely. You can have a flexible schedule as long as you're good with flexible income.
I shared something with our mastermind earlier this week, was like, there's a difference between flexible and freedom. And a lot of us want freedom, but in our business, the reality is what we have is some flexibility because we actually haven't done the things we need to do to get the freedom. So the cool thing is, yeah, you can have some flexibility. You want to go to your kid's game in the afternoon. That's great. And by the way, you should. I will, like, family first. But if you front loaded the work, then you don't have to worry about that. But that's a different conversation. But my point is a lot of people have flexibility, but they don't actually have freedom. They're still tied to their business, to their job, some one way or the other. And there is a difference. You can get to freedom, but the truth is flexibility is there first. And you've got to, if you ever want to get to freedom, it takes a lot of work.
And I think that psychologically speaking, I think that there's some very simple language swaps that we can use to make all that make sense. So, for example, I hear the term sacrifice a lot, and that can either be a good thing or a bad thing, depending on how it's interpreted. I have chosen within me to replace the term sacrifice with investment. I have more things than normal that I need to do, so I need to work until 8 o'clock at night. I could say I'm sacrificing my home time, my time with my son, my time with my girlfriend, my time that I could be doing this or that. Or I could say, I'm investing in my future because I have a phone call at 7 o'clock with a new realtor partner, and I'm one conversation away from changing everything. But everyone's, oh, it's just a sacrifice. I can't do real estate. I can't do lending anymore because it's just such a sacrifice. Is it? Or are you just looking at it the wrong way?
Yeah. I look at it as great. So you're going to sacrifice your entire future mm-hmm. instead? Yeah. The thing is, you can't have it all. You can have anything, but you can't have it all. And you can't do it all. You can't know it all. You can't go to it all, but you can pick and choose, and you can have anything, and you can do anything, and you can go anywhere. Just can't do it all. So whether you use the word sacrifice or like your swap of you're going to invest this time and this effort now because there's this other result that is actually more valuable to me than tonight. And trust me, I'm not the guy that says work all night. I leave the office at 4 or 5 every day. Like I just get up and leave. Like I'm done. The work will be there tomorrow. But I know that I also front loaded it. I capitalized my business early on.
So there's no guilt.
I have no guilt at all. I don't give a shit. I really don't. I like my family's more important. My time, my personal time is more important. I'll just get up and leave. The other thing that allows me to do that though, is while I'm working, I'm trying to work. So there's two sides to that. There's the, I put in the work ahead of time early on, and then there's the cool during my working hours. I'm going to work. I'm going to put in the effort and do my best as opposed to just being there and being clocked in, but not actually working.
So let me ask you this. What makes you more intentional? Everyone knows you have good results, great results, outstanding results. What makes you able to hone in and focus on the shit that moves the needle better than most?
I think that I think I've done the math on what actually does move the needle, and I don't feel bad about the things that don't. What I see a lot of people do is they think they've got to be everywhere and everything to everyone. And I don't buy that delusion, right? I'm okay with it being messy. Like, I'm just okay with it being a mess. And so I have a belief of what's most valuable with my time. And as long as I can spend enough time doing that, there's stuff will happen, or I'll have enough money for somebody else to take care of it. Either way is fine with me. Or it doesn't happen at all. That's okay. Because the thing that I do want to spend my time on does bring enough results. So I think that's the thing. And not having to have it look perfect. I'm okay with a mess. I'm okay with it not going well.
The only person that's going to care if it's perfect is you. And you being whoever needs it that way. People just want to see if you're doing a real estate transaction for somebody, all they want to see is the keys in their hand. That's it. They don't care if your desk is perfectly organized. They don't care that you checked all the boxes. They don't care whether it's super clean or super messy. All they care about is the result. Consumer facing, right?
Yeah.
But then if you look internally, everything has to be perfect. Why? Because generally and I'm as guilty of this as anybody, whenever I try to make things perfect, I know that I'm in avoidance somewhere. Because I know that if I spend all the time making this look really good, I get to slack on something over here. And I've fortunately, unfortunately gotten kicked in the teeth with that so many times. I've greatly improved on just letting things go. If this is messy, fine. Like, is it going to get us to the benchmark? Yes. Cool. Let's do that.
Yeah. I've always said, I've said this constantly to the people around me. They've probably got tired of me saying this. There's no such thing as emergency in real estate. Do what's most valuable. Do what's most important. And if someone's pissed, say sorry. And as long as you're doing your best, if that's not good enough for them, then move on. Not every client's worth having.
If you did all the things that you need to be doing, you can earn the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
If you and I were going to meet today and you called me saying, hey, I woke up and I'm sick. And cool. No problem, man.
Yeah.
I appreciate you letting me know. Hope you get better. Do you want me to send a nurse and an IV over to your house? Like, I got you. As opposed to if you were a person who never contributed, never kept his promises, all that stuff. And then, hey, sorry, I'm not feeling well. Really?
That doesn't feel as good, right?
No, it doesn't. I don't want to say earned your stripes. That's more of a entitlement kind of thing. I don't mean it that way. But yeah, you can truly earn the benefit of the doubt by just being a person of integrity over and over.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt. And you can do that with your clients. You can do that with your peers, whether you're direct to the consumer or if your customers are other businesses. The reality is, yeah, people understand. Like, you don't have to know it all, do it all, be it all. Like, you really don't. But I think most of us just in our business, we lie to ourselves and tell us that we do. We got to be the ones to do it. And
because there's so much judgment there, I feel like. So I had, and I still struggle with it to some extent, but in being like authentic. And what I mean by that is not getting what's inside out. if I have something that is important to me in a conversation that I want to say, and I don't say it for whatever reason, whether that's sparing the person's feelings on the other end of the conversation, or I don't want to say this thing because that person will look at me differently. I struggled with that for a lot of years because when I first got in the business, I didn't have anything. I didn't know anybody. So I would put on masks over and, okay, I need to talk to this person different than this person because of these reasons. And you end up with this identity crisis. And as I've developed, as I've been in coaching and therapy and these things more, I've realized that be you, and whoever vibes with that is like, that's your people. And whoever doesn't, they're not bad people. You're not a bad person. Those people just aren't your people.
Yeah.
The reason I bring that up is I've been meeting with more new agents lately than most. And this is a common theme that I see. And I went through the same thing when I got into real estate and when I got into lending. Just be you. Be truly authentic and be you. And then we all have to do the same things. We all have to learn the scripts. We all have to learn how certain things work. But what's really cool is if you can do that and be authentic, you get to put your own spin on things. Like, I wear Air Force Ones and I wear tracksuits to work and I like hip hop and I like to be loud on the phone and stuff like that. And I like to joke and banter. What I do for a living, as far as the transaction goes, is relatively boring. If I can make people laugh, if I can spice things up or whatever during the transaction with a client, or if I'm in good enough rapport with an agent and we can joke around and be playful, that's authentic. And that's who I am. That's who I am at home. And when you're congruent at work, the same way you are at home, that's when everything changes.
Yeah, no doubt. Dude, this is a good conversation. I'm glad we did this.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Colby Steele. You know what? Where can people find you? What's the best? Is it Instagram, Facebook? What, like a website? Where? How do people catch up with
Instagram
you?
And Facebook is where I'm heaviest. So at Steele Colby, and then Colby Steele or the Colby Steele Mortgage Team on Facebook. And I'm active. So I'm pretty video heavy right now. So I've been doing quite a bit of that. And thank you so much for having me, man.
Love it, man. Thanks for coming out today. I appreciate it. And that's it for this week's episode of Next Level Agents. Talk to you guys soon.
Thank you for tuning in to today's podcast. We hope you enjoyed it. If you're looking for even more valuable content and resources to help you grow your business, then we invite you to join our community, Next Level Agents at eXp Realty. By joining us, you'll gain access to exclusive benefits like live trainings, events, masterminds, weekly Zooms, digital downloads, and so much more, all designed to help you grow your business. To learn more and become a part of our community, simply visit kevinandfred.com/contact and get in touch with us today. Of course, if you're not quite ready to take the plunge and join our community, that's no problem at all. You can still access all of our great content for free right here on this podcast. And again, we thank you for listening. We look forward to continuing to bring you valuable insights and more advice in the future.